Alaskan Legislative Review, a program of analysis and discussion of issues facing the Alaska State Legislature, featuring the faculty and staff of the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. I'm your host, Scott Sterling. Our guest tonight is Dr. Gary Kopas, an Associate Professor of Justice at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and speak with you.
Okay. Tonight we're going to be discussing corrections. Corrections has been a major issue before the public over the past year. A lot of us have been concerned with the rising crime rates. There's a general perception that crime has been increasing, that we have some problems in Alaska with corrections. So I guess I'd like to start off by asking you, could you give us an idea, what is the state structure of corrections in Alaska?
Okay, Scott, this is an important question which you asked, because I think that many people do not realize that we differ quite significantly from most of the operational structures on the outside. In Alaska, we have what is known as a statewide system, referred to also by some as a unified system. And what this means is that anyone in the state of Alaska who is accused of or found guilty of and sentenced for a crime is placed under the state institutions or the state-operated facilities. This includes pretrial detainees. For example, if a person is accused of a crime and for some reason is not released before the actual trial, he will be detained in a state facility. We also have in our facilities misdemeanors as well as felons. The difference between misdemeanors and felons is a distinction which is made by the legislature in the laws that they pass, because it's important to remember that the legislators are the ones who determine which particular crime shall be classified as either felon or misdemeanors. But regardless of you being accused of a felony or a misdemeanor or in pretrial, the important thing is you will be confined in essentially the same facility.
Now, the authority of the state for corrections is total. Does that mean that the state is responsible for running all the facilities where we handle our criminal offenders?
Yes, we are responsible for handling all the facilities in one of two ways. Either we are directly responsible for the administration of the facilities, as would be an example of the Fairbanks Correctional Facility, where the individuals who work there are employed or employees of the state. We also have various programs which the state contracts out to private nonprofit organizations. An example of that would be the work release program, which is currently just moved out to our Esther community. But the state would have ultimate control through the contract conditions that were developed.
So in the case of our larger urban centers, Juneau, Ketchikan, Fairbanks, Anchorage, the state is responsible for running what we might popularly think of as the borough jail or the local jail or whatever we might think. The state is running those facilities.
Certainly they are. And the facilities that they are running are beginning to experience numerous problems, which I think perhaps we should turn to. The major problem that faces the state, and when I say the state, I refer not just to the current Division of Corrections, but the judiciary as well as the legislature, is probably overcrowding, overpopulation. I have before me, for example, a document which was published by the House Research Agency, and this publication date was January 1983, very current document. Let me just read you a statement here out of the summary of findings dealing with the overpopulation to give the listeners an idea of the problem that is faced. It says, quote, Alaska's prison population has increased by 49% in the past 4 years. In September 1982, the total institutional population, including both sentenced and unsentenced felons and misdemeanors, was 1,269. It is projected by January 1987, the population is expected to exceed 2000. This would require the state to double its existing correctional center capacity of 979 beds. Now, placing this in a national perspective, we are not unique. Every state in the union, I think it is fair to say, is experiencing to some degree an overcrowded, overpopulation problem. And the states are attempting to deal with these problems by a variety of means. And perhaps it might be interesting just to cite a few of the various ways that states are attempting to deal with overcrowding. The state of Michigan has developed a program by which, by law, that when the prison population reaches what is known as a critical level, and that's a ratio of bed space to the number of inmates there, that the governor is given the executive authority to actually readjust sentences on the part of the incarcerated individuals in the state of Michigan for purposes of letting them out. What's important here is that the state has given by law the power to the governor to, in essence, do the work of the judiciary as well as the legislature. And here we see the necessity of integrating the responsibilities of the three branches of government. The state of Minnesota is another state which has developed a program, and this program demands that the state legislature in Minnesota be cognizant of the prison population, such that if they wish to increase the severity of penalties for particular types of crimes, let's say that the state legislature has decided to deal more harshly, so to speak, with sexual assault crimes, and they will lengthen the amount of sentence that people will get who commit these crimes, they must go back and perhaps reduce the sentences for other types of crimes so that the overall effect of this increase will not be felt in terms of increased prison population. The state of Texas has pending current legislation which proposes to put a ceiling on the number of individuals that can be housed in the Texas Department of Corrections, and that ceiling is 40,000. The current state population in the Texas Department of Corrections is 37,500 individuals. Now, these are all felons, because in the state of Texas, as opposed to Alaska, their misdemeanants and pretrial detainees serve time in the municipal, or what we call county jails. So we're talking about 37,500 felons just within the state of Texas. What they will do when they reach the 40,000 limit is yet to be decided. Again, sharing the complexities and the interrelatedness between the branches of government. So, corrections is in an interesting predicament in that particular state. And what will happen, I don't know. As my friend who works there said, perhaps they'll reach a steady state equilibrium, and as soon as one walks in the front door, somebody will walk out the back door. But who decides that is yet to be dealt with.
And even though felons are of one category, there are a lot of differences between one kind of felon and another, depending on the kind of crime that was committed and so forth. Now, as to Alaska, you kind of hinted at one of the reasons why we may be experiencing overcrowding, and I'd like to talk about that some more. And that's, we have certain types of laws dealing with sentencing as to criminal penalties, and apparently in Alaska we have something called presumptive sentencing. Could you elaborate on that?
Certainly. Presumptive sentencing was adopted in the state of Alaska January 1, 1980. It was the sentencing structure which was developed by our state legislature. Presumptive sentencing means this. For a felon, and it applies only to felonies, first of all. In our state, we have three classes of felonies. We have a Class C felony, which is for those crimes which are deemed to be least severe. We have Class B felonies, and then we have the most severe, the Class A felony. For example, first-degree murder with a dangerous weapon or whatever. And then also the state has decided that regardless of the level of felony, that we shall also increase the severity of the penalty for repeat offenders. And so now we talk about Class C first offender, we may have Class B second offender, or Class B third offender or more. And as you go up in terms of severity of the felony levels from C to A, and you go across from first offender to multiple offender, the penalties are more harsh. And what the idea of presumptive is that the state legislature presumes that there is a legitimate punishment in terms of years of incarceration that is appropriate for certain types of crimes. In terms of either the class as well as the number of offenses. So therefore, when a person, let's say, has committed a Class B felony, and it is discovered that the person is a second felon, okay, we'll talk about this a little bit more in a moment, but the judge, by law, is required to pronounce a certain number of years, okay? And he can only change the sentence in terms of that number of years depending upon what we call mitigating or aggravating circumstances. And these mitigating circumstances and aggravating circumstances are also clearly specified in the law as to what they are. But a judge cannot deviate from the presumed penalty unless he is able to document the existence of the mitigating circumstances. Of course, the defense lawyers will be arguing for the mitigators, but the prosecutors can come back and cite the existence of the aggravators. So the judge's discretion is severely curtailed in the types of alternatives which he has from his bench to sentence a person with. Now what does that mean from the judiciary standpoint? It means that in the past that a judge had alternatives such as probation, for example. In other words, a judge could have said, well, even though this person has been adjudged guilty, I can still give the person probation because it is my decision, and as judge I'm required to make these decisions, that the person is not a threat to the community, not a threat to others, and I think he would have a better chance to be rehabilitated if we were to give him probation. What this would mean is he did not go to jail. He did not become one of these overcrowding statistics. Under our presumptive law, we are reducing the judge's ability to use non-institutionalized alternatives. And hence, we are seeing these people go to jail for prescribed periods of time, and hence increase the prison population. Sentencing is thought to be today, nationwide, probably the prime reason for the prison overcrowdedness. The crime rate itself has been, on the average, going up in our country at large. But there is not a necessary causal relationship between rising crime rate and prison increases. For example, in 1981, the FBI Uniform Crime Reports actually showed for about, I think, five of the index crimes, there was an actual decrease in the number of arrests nationwide. And yet, our prison population went up 12.5%. So in that same year. So this relationship between increasing crime rate and prison population is not a causal relationship. And what that tells us is that our prison population is going up for reasons in addition to the increase in crime rate. And one of those major reasons is the types of sentencing law which is being passed across the country.
Now, when legislators debate sentencing laws, are they looking at sentencing as a deterrent? Certain knowledge that you will serve a certain length of time as a sentence with no possibility of probation? Is there an ascribed deterrent value to that kind of sentence?
I think generally it would be true to say that today we are caught up in what I refer to as a law and order mentality. Beginning in 1960, our country went for massive efforts at rehabilitation. This was funded in a large part by the federal government, perhaps our readers remember hearing about the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, the LEAA. Many hundreds of millions of dollars were pumped into our correctional systems for purposes of rehabilitating, reforming an individual so that that individual could reintegrate into the community and become a productive citizen. The research that accumulated during the 60s and up until the mid-70s was very discouraging. We honestly were never able to document scientifically that our efforts were working. It seemed like that if we would let people out earlier versus locking them up longer, it didn't make much difference. Many of them were going to come back anyway. Whether we provided them with educational programs or not didn't seem to make a whole lot of difference. Perhaps a little bit, but not to the magnitude which our society was demanding to deal with the crime rate. So beginning in 1976, the state of Maine, I guess paraphrasing it, it had enough of it. And their legislature adopted what is known as a mandatory type of sentencing structure. And this essentially eliminated the possibility of parole in the state of Maine, so that if one is sentenced in the state of Maine, you would stay there and serve your sentence. It was the first time which we began to deviate away from a rehabilitation philosophy. This was quickly followed by many other states to various degrees. For example, the state of Illinois was one that in the late 70s adopted mandatory sentencing for only certain types of crimes. For example, let's say sexual abuse of a child. They said for these type of crimes, we're going to increase the sentence lengths, we're going to put an individual in jail, he will stay there and serve his time, hoping that somehow that might deter people from these types of crimes. And throughout the early 70s, thus far, this is the trend which we are seeing. Again, in 1980, January 1, Alaska adopted a presumptive sentencing model, a law and order model. And I would have to say that yes, that we are adopting these increased measures in terms of the harshness of the penalties with the hope that they will deter individuals from committing these crimes. But in part, I think we have to, in the social sciences, stand up and take some of the responsibility. And I think that we are adopting these harsher measures simply because we're frustrated. Other things don't seem to
be working. The emphasis on rehabilitation has not been borne out by the research. Since we're touching on philosophy, that sentencing is a part of how you approach the issue of crime and corrections, it seems obvious that presumptive sentencing has tremendous consequences for a correction system in terms of costs and the problem that we're addressing of overcrowding. Since overcrowding is a big problem in Alaska, and presumptive sentencing is playing a role, what kind of corrections philosophy is going to work for Alaska? Do we have any research that says this seems to be working for us?
Well, I suppose the best I can do in this instance is to cite perhaps some personal observations that I have made in working in and around prisons for, I suppose, almost 13 years now. In Alaska for the last 4 years. And one of the observations I make, Scott, is that for people who are eventually destined to become what I call the criminal problem or the criminal element, begin to demonstrate these tendencies quite early. Most individuals who wind up in our prisons that we would generally agree is a problem to society, as opposed to the individual who got caught DWI, and perhaps that was the first time, the last time of his life that he would get caught. We're not talking about that type of person. We're not talking necessarily about the juvenile who got caught for shoplifting, because he was, you know, got caught up in a peer group phenomenon kind of thing. We're talking about an individual who is definitely a crime problem. He seems to be almost a crime personality. These personalities and characteristics exhibit themselves very early. We we know that they have many times been already in contact with the juvenile system. So if I were to suggest at least the beginnings of a philosophy for the state of Alaska, I would say that the philosophy should be that potential crime problems can be detected and can be perhaps dealt with most effectively at their beginning, and that's going to be with the juveniles. And I would like to see the state of Alaska emphasize rehabilitation when I believe it can be most effective. By the time an individual has several offenses in his background, he has been exposed to the prison culture, he has been stigmatized, he has been labeled, it's going to be very difficult to quote-unquote rehabilitate him. And part of this problem of rehabilitation at the adult's level, too, I think has to be accepted by the general community. We have seen when examples, we tried to put work release programs into certain parts of our community. A tremendous uproar. You know, people don't want them there. This is the experience we've had nationwide. Think of it this way. Would you like an ex-felon living next to you? You know, ask yourself that question. Well, if everybody felt that way, then how can you really expect for the prison experience to be a rehabilitation? And the important point I'm trying to make here is that rehabilitation is not the sole responsibility of corrections. And the prime purpose, at least to me, of adult corrections is to provide for the safety of the community and to provide a safe and humane environment in which a person will serve the time that the state legislature says he will serve for the crime he has committed.
All right. What about the fact, one concrete way that the state seems to be addressing the corrections problem is that the governor and the legislature seem to have agreed pretty much that there needs to be a cabinet-level department of corrections in the state, and that the Division of Adult Corrections is in need of some management and administrative attention, and that the magnitude of our problem is such that it warrants a department level for corrections. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I certainly would, Scott. Corrections, as part of the criminal justice system, which exists because of a crime problem, is becoming one of the topmost social problems of the day. Our prisons are overcrowding. It's becoming a tremendously expensive part of state government. Corrections eats up a lot of the budget. I think just for adult corrections, FY83, that's approximately $39 million, maybe off a million, plus or minus, but a large part of our state government funds goes to operating just the adult system, so it's expensive. And the recognition of this problem, I think, will go a long way toward the solution. And one way that we can recognize the magnitude of the problem and our dedication to the response to this problem is to elevate those who are working towards solutions to the highest possible level in our government.
So that seems to be a very crucial question. Should we incorporate the juvenile justice system into an adult, you know, a department of corrections?
I think the intention of the governor, just from what I've read in the paper, really, was yes, that it should be incorporated. The reason that he did not, at the same time of creating departmental status, request that juvenile justice be brought over, was because he felt that it would be more manageable to create the new department with just the responsibility of the adult system. I think that the governor does have the intention to bring it over. And even though I am divided somewhat on the issue, I would say now, yes, I think it would be a good idea.
Okay. Given that the department's created, a single issue that department will be addressing is the construction of new facilities.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about overcrowding. We're talking about creating a Department of Corrections. There's been a lot of attention given to, is the best single solution overcrowding to build new facilities?
No. What bothers me about building new facilities is that they always seem to fill up. And not only do they seem to fill up, but they seem to be overcrowded. We cannot continue in the state to operate with the tremendous overcrowded problem we have. We must have solutions. But at the same time, I think it is mandatory that we examine perhaps the alternatives which we might have in terms of adjusting sentences and things of this sort. But given the state of overcrowding today, I would say that we do not have any choice at this time but to create additional facilities. What we need most, though, Scott, in this area, is some long-range planning. As you know, do we continue to build more facilities? What happens when these get overcrowded? And I think inevitably they probably will. Do we simply build more institutions after that? Do we continue to build institutions? How many people can we put under lock and key in the yes. state? These are the critical issues which have to be dealt with in the state. But we need to get on with that business of long-range planning. But in the meantime, yes, we do need additional facilities, and I would advocate that that we build them in the near future.
I'd like to conclude by going back to your point that corrections is not totally responsible for dealing with crime, that we must cultivate an awareness that corrections is the repository for our criminal offenders, but it's not the solution to crime. It's
in fact, it can even be a contributor of crime. Scott, we must realize that the conditions under which we place people in prisons are not pleasant conditions. They're not meant to be pleasant.
Right.
But at the same time, this does educate a person in ways which is not always the right. direction we like him to be educated. And in conclusion, I would like to say that crime in general is not just the problem of law enforcement. It's not just the problem of the executive branch of government or the judicial branch of government. It are the legislators. It is really the problem of us all. And we know that at least some crimes can be traced back to the failure of socialization, for example, which puts the importance back on school systems, on families, on youth groups. And how you deal with that is really a problem almost beyond the study of crime and criminology. You know, I think the solutions to crime will not be found just within criminology. I think they will be found in sociology, will be found in philosophy, will be found in the total social structure which make up this thing called the state of Alaska.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. Hopefully you'll have an opportunity in the future to explore this some more as corrections develops as an issue.
Thank you
for being on the show. This has been Alaskan Legislative Review. Our guest tonight has been Dr. Gary Kopas, Associate Professor of Justice at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and we've been discussing the problem of corrections in Alaska. Alaskan Legislative Review is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm your host, Scott Sterling. Our executive producer is Carla Tanella. If you would like a cassette copy of this program, please send $5 to KUAC-FM, University of Alaska Fairbanks, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.